Welcome to the Public Speakers Association Virtual Summit Board Never. I'm so excited to introduce to you the amazing Ms. Rosemary Barnes. Rosemary, why don't you take it from here?
Thank you, Tanya. That's great. The power of curiosity. That's one strong power. Not only is it a powerful thing, it's also a values thing. Here's what happens. An attitude of curiosity is very positive. It leads to adventures, it leads to discoveries, it leads to learning. An attitude of curiosity is also positively destructive. It completely destroys the possibility of boredom. When I was young, I lived on half in the city and half on the farm. We lived in the city all week, and then we'd race out to the farm on Friday, right after Dad got home from work, to do a whole week's worth of work on the farm on the weekend. It was a busy 2 days. My parents believe to this very, very day that if a child indicates curiosity or inclination, that they should be absolutely encouraged to follow that curiosity to its end. All my life I heard, well, that's a beautiful rock. I wonder what's underneath it. Oh my, we are going to the forest. I wonder what that moss feels like. Oh, look at this. It's a chicken. I wonder what it feels like to touch. Now, the idea of curiosity leads to the idea of I wonder. And I wonder leads to an acceptance attitude, because wondering is not about judging. Wondering is not about correcting or amending or changing. Wondering leads to, I see. That's an acceptance attitude. And an acceptance attitude leads to a yes attitude. Yes, and. In the past life, I taught theater. And one of the things that you teach in drama and theater is improv. Coming out and creating scenes and whatnot without any scripting is, first of all, a hoot and a half. It's really fun. It also builds tremendous confidence that no matter what you say, the person receiving is going to say yes and. And will take your idea, even if it's a complete turnaround of what came before, and run with it. A yes attitude can lead to glory. A yes attitude can lead to trouble, but a careful yes, a fully informed yes. You can't be fully informed unless you are curious. The other thing that it can lead to, though, is shiny squirrel syndrome and full-blown ADD type symptoms. If I haven't done that yet and I haven't investigated that yet and I don't know what's over there yet, well, everything is, it's not just a squirrel running by. It's a shiny one with bells, and it needs to be investigated. Zipping and zapping from thought to thought and target to target and offer to offer can lead to a whole bunch of confusion, not only in our own minds, but in the minds of those listening to us. When my sister got married, my parents went through decidedly strong and negative empty nest syndrome. Now, the farm of which I spoke earlier was a grain farm. Without people being there Monday through Friday, it was impossible to keep animals. So it was a grain farm. And it was clean and it was pristine and it had no electricity, no running water, no telephone. It was like living in the Stone Age, and it was such a phenomenal learning experience. The year my sister got married, my parents, not knowing that they were dealing with empty nest syndrome, went out and bought in this farm that hadn't seen animals on it for nigh on 30 years-ish, went and got 100 chickens and 5 turkeys. They so badly needed to nurture. They raised those chickens. They cared for those chickens. They did. My father trained those chickens. They would come when he called them. The turkeys would follow him around like puppies. He could make them jump. He could make them stay. He could make all the incredible things that he did with these animals. When it came time to slaughter the chickens, we had to then manage to kill, clean, and preserve 100 chickens. Okay, it wasn't 100. Probably 3 of them died over the course of the year, but an awful lot of chickens required eviscerating. Now, that is a smelly, nasty, horrible, yucky, awful job. But Mom and Dad couldn't do it themselves. They needed help. So to make it more palatable, Mom brought out the curiosity stick. And she said to us, come here. Look, I found an egg. Ah, look, there's an egg. Look, there's an egg. And then seeing us thus entranced, although albeit maybe disgusted a little too, she then showed us the stomach. And she showed us the craw, which led to us asking, Mom, do chickens have livers? So she showed us the liver. And it turned out to be a horrendously stinky, nasty experience that was so full of learning because she enticed us by giving us a chance to satisfy curiosity. Walking down the quarter mile gravel road from the road to the house meant that there was all kinds of little rocks on that gravel thing, and you could look at it as being boring, a gravel road, But no, curiosity meant that if you found a pretty rock, you picked it up, you examined it, you looked to see if there was a bug hiding underneath it, and in so doing, gained knowledge, understanding of the world around us. Curiosity is incredible. I was really, really young when I started wanting to learn to drive. And again, in true parental form, if a child shows interest, they should be encouraged. So I was the ripe old age of 10 or 11 before I started driving the tractor. Out in the fields where I could really do no harm, there was nothing to hit. It was perfectly safe. And of course, Dad scaffolded, so I felt comfortable. Now, I went out on that tractor and I was harrowing the fields. If you don't know, harrows are those pokey nail type things that are hooked onto a flatbed and you drag it around the fields in order to even it out. I was harrowing. I took too sharp a curve at the end of the row. You know, going the straight part is easy. It's when you have to do something that you get into trouble. So I turned too swiftly. The harrows started piling up on themselves. I thought that the whole tractor was going to turn over. I popped one of the hydraulic hoses, and I will never forget the sound and smell of hot hydraulic fuel splashing onto the motor. Well, my dad rescued me, of course, and all was well, and it was perfectly fine. But the point is that I learned, and my curiosity about what happened that the harrows actually turned that way led me to understanding how to not make that mistake again in the future. There is an awful lot of generational curiosity at work today in the work world. The boomers and Generation X were not allowed to be curious in the work world. They were fed funneled information that allowed them to do their job brilliantly and then go home. To be called into the boss's office like as not meant full-blown trouble. You weren't being called in for congratulations. Curiosity then about what was behind those closed doors, because offices were kept closed then, curiosity was not encouraged, not by action, not by thought, and certainly not by consequence. The boomers and the Generation X individuals took great comfort out of structure. Structure meant things like job descriptions to the nth degree, procedures manual to cover everything from what to do with an empty pen to what to do if there was a bomb threat, and everything else in between, remembering that this generation, these generations were fueled with the Cold War fears. They didn't have the internet to keep them abreast of news, and so the only thing that they could do was create interesting stories in their head about those awful Red Russians. They lived under fear of atomic war. They lived under fear that everyone was spying on them. So structures and systems made them feel safe, but it certainly didn't do anything to foster a sense of curiosity. Fast forward to Generation Y, our beloved millennials. That generation was the first to have to deal with the massive influx of information brought about by, you know it, the internet. Now, there are more things changed than that. Now, Generation Y was not raised in an atmosphere of fear. Generation Y was raised knowing each individual was spectacularly special. They were all destined for greatness, and they all could be successful. We all knew that. A massive amount of curiosity was now acceptable, because now the Generation Y children were free to explore. This was the age of exploration of what you like, what you don't like, your sexual preferences. It was an age of curiosity. It also brought about the age of instant gratification, thanks again to the internet. Needing instant gratification was the result. That has led to the current crisis that we have in our business world. You see, the Generation X and the baby boomers were very content to handle their piece of the whole picture puzzle, take care of that piece beautifully, and when time came to perform, slide that puzzle piece into place. Our Generation Y and our younger ones, Generation Z, will not abide that. If you want them to buy in fully to a project, they want to be involved. They need to know why things are being done the way they are, the consequences of non-performance, the benefits of performance, and they need to know all the information in order to slot themselves in and do their part brilliantly. But without the background information, they will not play the game with you. Their sense of curiosity is much bigger, and they expect it to be satisfied. Now, I'm not sure that's a good thing, a bad thing, or an inside-out thing. I don't see that being curious can lead to anything but good, provided you use a little caution, of course. But it comes at a cost. Not to Generation Y, but to the people around them. Because now, bosses who never had to field questions, who never would tolerate being asked why, now our leadership is being taxed by the insanely curious Generation Y. Parenting Generation Y meant that they were paid intense amounts of attention. Generation Y completely obliterated the old rule of children should be seen and not heard. Thank goodness. Now it's swung the other way, of course, where children are now feeling that they have every right to be involved in every conversation and have attention paid at all times. It's an interesting thing, but when you think about it in terms of curiosity, what a glorious time to be alive, where all you have to do if you have a question is ask your computer. Does that satisfy curiosity? Not always. Curiosity leads to answers, but answers very often lead to more questions and more curiosity. Now, this can create a bit of a maelstrom in your head with all this information, all these questions, all these answers, all this excitement, all this love of life running around in your head. You can easily see how stereotypical symptoms of ADD are appearing more and more and more often. It's not that these individuals have attention deficit disorder or hyperactive disorder or any other disorder. It just means that their curiosity is alive and well, thank you very much, and I'm not sure we should squash that. Generation Z now is taking it a step further. Generation Z are the individuals born from the year 2000 and later-ish. Generation Y, because I forgot to mention it, are born 1980 to 2000-ish. Our Generation Zs now are just as curious as their predecessors, but now their curiosity is spread much wider. They are world citizens and have been since the day they came out of the hatch. Generation Y started getting their instant gratification, asking their questions of the machine, asking and receiving answers, leading to more questions, leading to more answers, and a tremendous age of discovery. Curiosity for Generation Z started worldwide. They now have a greater understanding and empathy for people all over the globe, and not just people, animals, climate, the whole ball of wax. The planet is their most prevalent care. They are determined to find ways to improve the health of our planet again. If you want to see dedication in action, check any schoolyard and ask them about what we're doing with garbage. Ask them how we're taking care of our fossil fuel situation. Ask them about the consequences of tsunamis in Singapore, as opposed to on Vancouver Island. And they will treat them with the same amount of respect because the planet is their area of focus. And they are allowed to be curious and seek answers and make mistakes. I rebranded my company, probably a year and a half ago-ish. And in order to do that rebranding, my very brilliant brander sent me through a values analysis so that my company branding excuse me, would represent me and my company most completely. A values analysis got us on our way. It changed the way I see life, the universe, everything, my company. That values analysis absolutely changed the way I see my place in this world and what my responsibilities are within this world. I always had thought that I valued intelligence. All my life, I thought intelligence was one of my greatest values. I thought it was the intrinsic to success. By going through this values analysis, I discovered that in fact, it's not intelligence at all. It's curiosity. That simple statement has altered my existence. It created an opportunity for me to reinvent my company, the way I deal with people, the kinds of questions I pose. The realization of that the value was not intelligence, but rather curiosity, changed everything away from looking for to enjoying. It took my attitude away from judgment of whether there was intelligence or whether there was life on the moon. No more judging. Now it's to observation. What do I see? Not how do I deem it to be important? What do I see? It took me away from the need for evidence toward a desire for discovery, toward desire for improvement, toward desire for what else can I do better? It gave me a way to honestly and openly search for ways to improve, for new ways to champion others to their success. What do you value? What do you believe? What do you believe in? And to what lengths will you go to defend those beliefs? Your values are your basis of confidence. Confidence does not come from success. Confidence doesn't come from always being right. Confidence comes from not fearing to be wrong, from knowing you can navigate your way out of difficulty and even failure. You cannot trust that you can accomplish even a task like changing a tire without doing it. You can read the manual till you're blue. You can memorize it, but you still don't know whether you have the strength in your arms to pick up a brand new tire and put it up on that axle. You have to feel vulnerable and frightened and proceed anyway. We are speakers. We cannot absolutely trust that we can engage our audience if we've only written the script. To gain confidence, we have to stand before that audience feeling vulnerable, maybe frightened, and we have to deliver that presentation. The glue that holds an individual together during times of duress, trouble, crisis, panic, it's our belief in our values. Getting curious about your values, identifying them, gaining clarity, allowing yourself to enhance or even change those values will do more to build your confidence than anything else. Cultivating an open, I wonder attitude can lead to fantastic discoveries and realizations for both personal and professional means of reaching goals, reaching success, being of service. As speakers, it is vital for us to hone our craft. Can we improve our presentations so we can engage the listeners and keep them on the edge of their seats? Can I better prepare them to receive the information I'm about to share with them? Can I help my listeners internalize the information better so they're more confident taking action on it? Curiosity leads to questions. Questions lead to answers, which lead to more questions, which lead to more answers. As speakers, it is so very important that we continually seek ways to improve our presentation skills so that we can be of even more valuable service. Are you curious enough to even consider a new system or methodology? Are you confident that your message is being heard as you intend it? Here's a big one. Is your vocal finesse enhancing or distracting from your impact? As a speaker, your voice is your moneymaker. Are you using it to full capacity? Are you altering your pacing? Are you using a combination of head voice, chest voice, mixed voice? Are you using vocal white space to greatest effect? Is your voice clear and resonant, or is it strident and a little harsh? And are you curious enough to find out? It is to that end that I make you my offer today. Let's get curious. Let's talk for about an hour. Let's discover how you can use your voice as the most powerful tool in your speaking arsenal. And let's do it for free. It would be an absolute pleasure to speak with you, about your voice, and about how you are using your voice. Simply contact me at, and here it is, rbarnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, at confidencestages.com. And we'll set a date and time to discover how you can reach and serve more people by using your voice more effectively. No charge, no obligation, just curiosity. My name is Rosemarie Barnes. My company is Confident Stages. My mission is to champion others to speak to engage and speak to succeed.